Welcome to the Floor Academy podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Hedin, licensed contractor in the state of Arizona. Again, folks, I'm going to figure this out. I lied to you in the last episode when I said I would figure it out by the next one, but I filmed them like the next day and I haven't figured it out yet. So, licensed contractor in the state of Arizona, former owner of Illustrious Hardwoods. And joining me this week is Allison Mullins. If you're going to look her up, it's one L. It's Allison with one L. Don't get it wrong. Otherwise, you get an email back and she says, hey, it's one L. And I don't blame her because people can't say my last name right. And it drives me mad. So I know that she's been going through her whole life with this. And she's Allison with one L. And we need to respect that and appreciate it. We're going to talk about limbic resonance. And I know you're all thinking, what the hell is Kyle on about this time? What is this? We're gonna get a little touchy feely today. We're inviting, you know, women onto the show because they bring a softer side to the business, and we need to be emotionally intelligent. And so we're gonna talk about how to, you know, work with an emotional IQ and relate to people, how to build our team, work as a leader, encourage people, find things in common with them. And we're going to get deep on this side of things because it's really important, and we can't just throw trowels at apprentices and expect them to want to stick around with us and grow and become the next big, you know, to do in the flooring, tile, and stone industries. That's just not going to happen. So we have to grow as people. And this is how we're going to do it. We're going to learn about limbic resonance. It was really fascinating. She was giving a talk at Tice, and, you know, it caught my attention. I was like, oh, I got an interview about this. Not that I was paying attention while she was talking, but I heard that bit. And I was like, this is it. I was like, there's an interview in this. So we've talked. I'm absolutely thrilled to be able to have her on and do it. She is an author. She's the author of The Art of Selling. We make order makers, not order takers. She is the founder of Rep Method Sales Training. She's got over 20 years experience in sales, merchandising, marketing, content creation. She's built her own business on the principles of selling. She volunteers with multiple organizations, whether it's Women in the Flooring Business. She's with NAWIC, National Association of Women in Construction. She's with local stuff. She's all over the place. She's involved. She cares. She knows that if you give back to the community, you get back out of it, guaranteed. So why are we here? What's Floor Academy, right? Why are you even listening to this right now? We're here to talk about the business side of your contracting business because nobody else is. And how do you grow it if no one's talking about it? We have to spend time getting better at the behind the desk stuff so that we can be better out in the field where the revenue is earned. But I guarantee you, you make more behind the desk than you ever will in the field. So we're going to figure out how to do all of the behind the scenes stuff so that you can run a more efficient, more manageable, have more free time, be more profitable, and actually do the things you want to do. Because I know you got into wanting to run your own business because you said, my boss is an idiot. I'm going to go do it on my own. And I'm going to have all this free time, and I'm going to hang out with my family, and I'm going to be able to go fishing and camping or whatever it is that your hobbies are. And now you don't have time to do any of it, and it's driving you nuts. We're going to fix all that. We do every week, every Wednesday. Like, subscribe, leave a review. If you want to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/floor academy. Even $5 a month goes a long way in helping. We also, we got those nice sponsors around here, and we love what they do to help support us. So we got a quick word from Cronus Flooring Software. If you're looking for an affordable and easy way to manage your flooring business, Cronus Flooring Software is your solution. You can streamline your workflow for managing leads, inventory, and scheduling installations. It includes every feature needed to support your business at a very affordable price. It's extremely user-friendly, and with one click of a button, it integrates with QuickBooks Online so that you can figure out your profitability and get your invoices over there and get paid more efficiently, faster than having to chase down money all over the place, because I know you hate that one. You can visit cronusoft.com to schedule a demo, and Victor and Chesney will get you taken care of. That's cronusoft.com. Let them know I sent you over. And again, they will take great care of you. That is enough out of me for sure. Allison, welcome to the show. Who are you? What do you do? Why do you do it?
Thank you, Kyle. That was quite an introduction. I am Allison Mullins. I started Rep Methods last year to bring sales training to our small mom and pop style service and manufacturer company businesses within the construction industry. Historically, I come from the sales account manager, marketing manager side of the stone industry. And over the years, I had the opportunity to hear my customers and listen for this need. So here I am, and I wrote a book about it too. So thanks for having me on the show.
You're welcome. I'm looking forward to it. So, limbic resonance, right? Like, again, I heard, I've learned a little bit, but if I'm anything, I'm honest. I was not paying attention, but you caught my attention and I knew it was going to be a great topic. So, you know, I summed it up, but it's so much more than what I'm even saying it is, right? So essentially it's emotional IQ, which I know that some of the listening audience may be some old school tough guys and we don't need emotional intelligence. And I'm going to break it down for you. What are we really looking at within this? And then we can start kind of diving down the rabbit hole and figuring out how we can implement this into our business and ourselves personally.
Well, sure. So I'm old school too. And when I came to trying to write classes and figure out how to communicate to my customers, the art of selling, right? That's really what I'm all about. And I'm very old fashioned in those methodologies. I do a lot of planning and research along the process. So coming across this book that we refer to in the podcast, the Primal Leadership book, was a great way for me. It was just, it hit home with everything that I couldn't put my own vocabulary and methods around, because I'm at the heart of everything. I'm literally just an experienced customer service salesperson who's been very successful along that journey. And I couldn't always find the terminology to complete what I was trying to say.
Okay.
Limbic resonance hit me in regards to cold calling and building relationships with the people around you. It is not just a selling tool, because as an emotional intelligence tool, limbic resonance is about the connection that you form with anybody that you're having a relationship or a conversation to. When it comes to owning a flooring business, if you are an installer, at the end of the day, you've got to try to find a bond with who you're working with. It's not just get in the house, get the project done, and get out sometimes. Sometimes it's upselling. Sometimes it's rescheduling. Sometimes there are problems. The art of limbic resonance means that you are able to communicate and have a conversation and block out the rest of the world. So in another talk that I did out at Tice, what comes up in ownership questions to me a lot is they want to relay active listening to their salespeople and to their staff and to the receptionist. We want to be able to build more listening capabilities through our businesses and with our clients. Well, limbic resonance is a big part of active listening, because it's taking the time to find that connection with the other person involved, or multiple people, or an entire audience. I mean, this is what I have to practice if I'm getting in front of, you know, 150 people at a trade show. I got to learn who am I talking to. I've got to quickly, within a few moments sometimes, analyze the conversation that needs to be had. And I need to be able to communicate responsively. And that whole process is what, like, kind of limbic resonance is about. So I hope that was a good summary.
So I'm figuring out what my audience is looking for, and I'm finding that way to connect with them. It's not about me. It's not about what I offer, which has been talked about on the show a million times as selling. Stop selling, solve a problem. But now I have to solve that problem by finding the little things to connect with, right? If Mrs. Jones has pictures of her kids all around, or there's pictures of traveling all around, you know, I can pick up ideas of who she is and what her hobbies are, and I can connect on that level.
Yes, and it's about making the choice of keeping you as the person on the job that much easier for the customer. When we practice limbic resonance, we're identifying and chameleoning ourselves. We're, you know, adjusting our tone of voice. We are considering what the customer needs over ourselves. And within doing so, you're creating this beautiful environment that just sort of like makes the whole process easy. So when you're closing sales, when you are going in the home and trying to upsell, it's a lot easier to do those types of things if you can grab the clues around you about this individual and really practice empathy, like looking to hear and feel what is this customer needing from you in this moment in time.
That makes a lot of sense, because I know a lot of people get into sales and they think it's like, let me cram what I do down your throat, and I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to hear how great you are. I don't want to hear about all the stuff. Again, for me, and the way that I found to be successful was, what's the problem? How do I solve it? And then make you feel good that the problem is solved, which means I've connected. I understand you. I have that empathy. And I'm like, oh, you don't like that the dog pisses all over the carpet and your house stinks. You're embarrassed by your home, right? You want something that allows you to have your friends over. Well, we can put this flooring in. It cleans up super easy. And now your girlfriends can come over and you can do your, you know, your book club and drink your bottles of wine, and I'll get down. And that sounds great. I love this, right? It's so, yes, I agree. So where do we start? Like, how does this situation develop, or what skills do I need to change about myself to pick up on these cues and, you know, identify with the person next to me?
I like to start with something as simple as opening your eyes. You kind of touched on it a little bit about the kids, you know, with pictures on the wall when you walk into the home, and, you know, maybe it's a football helmet on a shelf, or this person obviously has like a lot of modern and abstract art around, or, you know, maybe you can tell immediately what type of music that they listen to. Finding ways to bond over something that interests the other person that you're talking mm-hmm. to is a great way to build connection. You know, I'm a type A personality, and this is definitely something that I've had to work on over the years in my own personal development, is because a lot of times you walk into a room and you might just take over the conversation or take over driving what you want and what you want to talk about, when in actuality, sometimes we have to listen first. And that brings me to asking questions. Yesterday, I was in Atlanta and in front of an amazing luxury residential builder team. This is the internal architect team, and doing a talk about limestone. So instead of laying all the samples on the table and just start throwing out random amounts of data, what's the first thing that I do in front of an audience like that? I actually ask them questions about, what do they already know? What do you see on the table that interests you? Where are you missing pieces of information? And without knowing a single person in that room, you know, on a different level, half the time you don't even know everybody's names who's in front of you. You might only have one contact that you've been communicating with. Mm-hmm. Immediately, it's amazing how that energy switches in a conversation like that, when you immediately go and you start asking them about what they need, asking them about what they know. It gives me the chance to listen and then actually provide them the information that they want, because it's not always about the information that I need to get across. There will be opportunities for that later, but it's in that moment that you get to build this level of trust, and you get to actually like start this cool communication tool. And then before you know it, they actually want to listen to what you have to say. Mm-hmm. And they actually want you to stay, and they actually want you to become a resource for them. And then maybe they're even going to refer you to another office or to another customer. It's amazing what happens when you start off a relationship and a conversation thinking about the other person first.
That's really smart. We all like talking about ourselves more than we want to hear someone else talk about themselves. But again, you're starting it off and you're saying, you tell me where you're at, right? I don't want to assume that you're an idiot and know nothing about what we're going to talk about. And I don't want to talk to you at such a high level that you absolutely have no clue what it is that I'm telling you. So where it, that's a good way. I like that, to go in and find where the audience is at, to be able to have the proper conversation and get them up to speed where you need them, but then fill in the blanks for them as well.
Well, and I love that you and I are having this chat today, and we've never really talked about this before, because it's a great opportunity for me to bring up mansplaining.
Yes. Let's not have do you that, ever... folks.
And I know, based on the flooring industry, you know, there's a lot of men in this world and there's a lot of women in this world. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if men are always aware about the mansplaining effect, but as a consumer, having had contractors and remodelers work with me over the years, it's often interesting when someone walks in the house and assumes that I know nothing about construction and remodeling. And what happens to my demeanor in that moment when I think to myself, you bleep, 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 have no idea what kind of knowledge I might already have. And so that's a great example of, you know, never assume what the person knows or what interest they have. And it's always best to talk a little bit first and ask for information.
Definitely. That is a problem. It's very funny to me that this is a male dominated industry. However, 85% plus of the buyers that make the ultimate decision are females. And yeah, we don't have more female salespeople in the industry to go around and make Mrs. Jones and Mrs. Smith feel much more comfortable when you're in their home. And it's just a guy going in and like cramming info down their head of like, we're going to come and do the install and you need this vinyl plank or this piece of carpet because it's super great and has stain resistance. And here's its $5,000 sign here. Whoa. Like, no wonder you didn't get the project. Because you walked in and you're just shoving stuff that she doesn't even care about at her.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I love that we're talking about this other book. It's not about my book, but Primal Leadership. If you haven't read it, you guys, I am not a friend of this author, but it's about emotional intelligence. It's about being socially and self-aware. And I think that everybody in the entire world could take 5 minutes and do some self-analysis sometimes on like how they handle themselves in a customer setting or in a public setting. And you know, we can all use a little tweaking sometimes, mm-hmm. even myself.
I agree. I think self-reflection is huge. We've got to take a step back. And again, that's really one of the points of the show, is like to encourage people to, especially as flooring installers, we constantly get that 12-inch view. We're down on the floor. We're looking at a shower wall. We're putting stuff, whatever. Like, we are right there. And it's funny that when they're installing, they know to step back and take a look at the entire room. But when are they taking, like, we need to learn to take the step back and look at our business or look at ourselves or look at the relationships we're developing. And so there's a grander world to making everything run more effective. And we have to learn how to balance all the sides of it. Because honestly, if you're emotionally a hot mess, I don't care how successful of a salesperson you are. Like, eventually it's going to start affecting you negatively and you're not going to be such a hot salesperson. And if your personal relationships are falling apart, then it's going to affect your performance at work because you're going to be distracted from what's happening and not be able to disassociate from it. So finding that way to work through things and get a bigger perspective and start working on, hey, things aren't going well over here. I need to pay attention to this. And then I can have things be more balanced and I can get back to focusing harder over here. It's really important.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that another subject that I knew you would like about this book, Primal Leadership, is they talk about something called CEO disease.
Okay.
CEO disease is essentially when you've built this company, and it can be small or large. I mean, I'm a CEO and I'm a company of one, mm-hmm. You know, so it doesn't matter the size of a business, but typically as you grow in a business, you do start to have other people doing performing certain roles, and you start delegating responsibilities to other teams around you. And for anybody who runs a business that's relatively large, that amount of underlings, if you'd like to call them that,
team members, team members. Let's be nice. They're team members.
Team members, direct reports, whatever you want to call it. CEO disease is when the people that you have around you aren't being transparent with you and aren't utilizing emotional intelligence and really being honest with someone who is in charge and a key decision maker. And it actually hurts the business 10 times fold, because you might not be in the know about what's actually happening around you, simply because you trust the opinions of people who just want to make you happy. They're not really always giving you the good with the bad. And that's a part of self-awareness and emotional intelligence and being able to be fully transparent and honest and taking the good with the bad.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that get that, well, you don't want to be told you stink, right? Like, being surrounded by yes men is way better. It's way more fulfilling to be like, yes, you're very good at what you do. Oh, you make all the right decisions. This is so, you're so great. Where's that going to get you, though?
Yeah.
So, like, so having the people to be honest, yes.
And if you're getting, you know, constant positive feedback, but you're not getting any negative feedback, or you're not allowing for employee surveys or people to have transparency and honesty about their work environment and how things are going, if you're not getting any bad reports, then there's something wrong in that picture, because we're a human race and we're all imperfect, and mm-hmm. there's always room for improvement in every level of business, whether it's, you know, purchasing or installations or inventory management or showroom merchandising, you know, all of these different elements that go into like running a product-based business. We'll just call it that, mm-hmm. a service-based business. If you aren't receiving any room for improvement in those vicinities, you might want to take a look very hard at the people who you're surrounded with.
There's that. Just put in the systems to get the feedback. I think a lot of times we don't even go asking for it because we don't want to know. We're perfect. We did everything right. It's so great. Mm-hmm. But realistically, it's not. And people are upset. I know a client of mine had to let go of an employee, and the other employees finally came to him and they were like, why did it take you so long? And they were like, you know, he didn't fit in. He wasn't good for our culture. Like, they used all the right terms because he's mm-hmm. big on like talking about the culture and about the company and whatnot. And he was like, I had to do what was right. I had to get all the documentation in place. And you know, it took a minute to make happen, but it was. But then he was like, if you guys were so upset, why didn't you come to me sooner? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, there's two sides to it. So if they were that upset and they knew it was being toxic to their environment,
yes.
they could step up and say something and he wouldn't have been upset. But, you know, and then he could have communicated sooner to them that, hey, I'm working on it. I have to get all my ducks in a row so that we're not, mm-hmm. you know, the company doesn't have to pay unemployment and do all this other stuff. And okay, now everyone's on the same page. So it's the feedback loop has to exist, and you have to create it, whether you can't not want it. You have to be open to being criticized.
1,000%. A couple of things here. Mm-hmm. I have coaching, you know, business that's a part of the sales training programs. Yeah. And very often I find myself in the predicament of having to be honest and losing clients, because, you know, they'll come to me with a person in their staff that they'd like to invest in. You know, when we get going in that process, it hasn't happened all the time, but occasionally you get somebody and I have to be very real with them and say, you know, well, how much money are you willing to invest in this employee? And based on their results, are they in the right field? A lot of times this limbic resonance can also be applied to your staff and their positions and what roles that they're playing. In my line of work, I think I've seen a couple of salespeople lose their jobs because maybe it was time for them to cut the cord and not make any further investments. And I would rather be honest and not push somebody for a sale, knowing that maybe one day they're going to get that other employee or a new hire come in, and then they'll ask me to, you know, help train them going forward. So honesty and transparency goes a long way in any size and any business.
I agree. Why would you not want to have honesty, integrity, and like, what are you trying to get over on somebody? Like, how is that helping you do it? And there's a balance to it, because honestly, I believe that, you know, with my installation company, I believed that I was the best option for anyone. So I should go and sell that as hard as I can. But I also have to be open to the fact that they don't view it that way. And so how do we figure that out, right? Or somebody on your team is, they may be very, very talented, but their personality may not work for the rest of the team. And that's why I ended up finding the flooring industry, is that I was very, very good at what I did in reality television. My personality, people were not very fond of. And so I was no longer hired, because nobody wanted to deal with Kyle.
Hard to believe, Kyle.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. You know, you got to know me a little bit more. I like to run my mouth about things that, you know, it wasn't my decision to determine how producers should interact with talent. And as a camera guy, I should sit there and just film and shut up.
I think that's more probably a case of you wanting to be dual role, cameraman and director.
I could have gone that route. It came down to, it was a morality issue, to be honest. There's, reality television deals in a very, very gray area. And some of this stuff should have been very black and white. But it's not. I think that that's a business owner thing too. Is that there's some people that will, you know, you hear people like, oh, I'm okay having the tax person that operates, you know, way over the line, and I'll take that risk. Like, I'm okay over there. Mm-hmm. Well, do you want to operate that way? Or like, to me, again, it's like, it's very black and white, and there's like, you can straddle the line, but you don't need to go way over it and try and justify it. And I think we do that with, as salespeople, we can get into that trap. As bosses and team leaders, we can get into that trap.
You mean like looking the other direction when you see something blatantly wrong on the other side?
That would be a good example. Or just outright lying about a materials performance because you get a spiff on it. You know, I'm sure there's plenty of salespeople that will push the material they're going to get a bigger bonus on when it's not necessarily the right fit for the client. You know, seeing somebody install something wrong and letting them get away with it, not stopping the installation because they refuse to do the prep work, and you say, fine, I'll just install it, and whatever happens is what happens. There's all kinds of stuff, but I think that's part of this discussion too, is finding a way to step up and connect with people more, and let's have that honesty and integrity. If we're going to expect it from them, then we need to display it back as well.
Yeah, 1,000%. I mean, that's something that I teach wholeheartedly. Relationships, and like you said something in the beginning about my volunteerism, right? Mm-hmm. Like I definitely do a ton of volunteering, and there's no pay, there's no direct rewards for that, but honestly, I know that I bring to the table when it comes to planning events or big ideas, and I love providing that for other people. And I know that the balance for me is the exposure that I'm going to get on the other side. Mm-hmm. But maintaining an honest and integrity style of communication and selling, I believe, brings all of us that longer term relationship business, in the same regards as, you know, what groups are you networking with? Where are you spending your time? And asking for the negative information as much as the positive.
Well, and it has to be you're being very genuine right now. And I can tell that, but that's the key factor. And even as we were talking about stuff earlier, Lucas Hendrickson online made a comment, and he was like, look, that's all great as long as it's not a tactic and it's actually genuine. Like, going in and learning about Mrs. Jones and trying to have that empathy and all of that, like, you can fake it, but people are going to see right through your bullshit. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to go very far. Like, if you truly do it, like, I know what happens when I do good things. It generally comes back to me. But if it doesn't, I'm still okay with that. Like, I want to go do it because it makes me feel good. It's not out of a place of greed. It's not out of me knowing that I'm going to get something back. It's, I enjoy giving back to the community in this way. I enjoy participating in people's lives in this way. And it just kind of works out. And that's cool. But if it doesn't, like, I still enjoy doing that thing. And so I want to come to it from a very genuine place. I don't want to fake it. Everyone knows it's the classic used car salesman example. Like, they're just, the reason they make you feel icky is because they're being icky, because it's fake. Yes.
No, 1,000%. You know, I'm also still a sales rep too. You know, I'm an agent for a company in Vicenza. And this last week, another part of my week was, I went to a networking event, met a new contractor, mentioned a few things. Before I know it, they mentioned they have a specification that they can't figure out that just got through to them by the millwork company. And I made plans to be there pretty much the next morning because I already had a packed schedule. And I was like, okay, well, if I come over at 7:30 in the morning, you know, we'll take a look at it. I get over to the installation, their showroom. It's a small showroom, but they're really more of an installation company with just very few products on display. And I get over there, and it was the father who told me about the spec, and I met with the son who was actually doing the analysis of the takeoff. And when I get in there and start looking at it, it wasn't limestone. It was travertine, which is a type of limestone, but it's not the same. And it wasn't something that I could offer. But at the same time, he was completely lost with thicknesses. And he was trying to do all this work with miters and cutting and fabrication. And I looked at the guy and I said, you know, you really need to put this whole specification into parts and pieces and takeoffs and let somebody cut to size this for you. You know, overseas, you can bring it in and then all you have to do is some minor edits. I was like, you don't want to do all this fabrication. It's way too much. You, in this regard, you guys need to play the installers, not necessarily the fabricators. Long story short, his mom is listening. He's younger, you know, and his mom is listening on the conversation. I definitely left the meeting thinking, well, I didn't get this spec and I'm not sure I'm even going to get this job. But at the same time, about an hour later, the gentleman, the father of the business, called me and he started apologizing. And he says, you know, I was in sales for a long time and I know that that didn't go as well as you would have hoped. I'm sorry that my son kind of mentioned that he actually doesn't even really want this job. And I'm sorry that, you know, it wasn't the product that you are actually representing. Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure that you have a good day. And I thought, hey, first of all, the fact that he called me to check on how that made my day, A+, Dad, like, way to go. First of all, you know, most owners don't care about how sales reps feel, you know, and how rejection can make or break our day, right? But at the same time, number two, he wanted me to know that he really valued the fact that I was there at 7:30 a.m. the next morning. I was helping the son analyze the spec, and he valued my information and my experience greatly, regardless of what happens on the outcome. So there was two limbic resonance things that happened within this one event, right? Number one, I obviously formed some kind of miraculous bond without even saying anything, just because I did what I said I was going to do. Mm-hmm. I showed up early in the morning. I took an interest. I didn't really care knowing whether or not it was for my specific product or not. And I stayed and I helped and I saw it through. And then last but not least, when the father called me and I said, listen, this is no skin off my back. I've been in this business a long time. And all I care about is that, A, you know who I am. I'm here to help. And I know that you'll call me in the future when the opportunity arises. Wow. In just one evening networking event to a meeting in the morning, I know that I also was able to create a long-lasting relationship with a brand new client simply by listening, being honest, being transparent, talking direct, and showing up for the job, and being a great person, right? So I think that speaks a lot about what we are talking about here today. And I hope
definitely
you're getting live comments from the audience. I don't know. I hope somebody loves that story. Please,
I do. I have a follow up to it. I got to interrupt us real quick though, and then we'll come back. I'll tell you a similar story. Quick word from Johns Manville. Compatible with all GoBoard products is the new GoBoard membrane. If you're asking why a membrane when GoBoard itself is waterproof through and through, the answer is simple. A membrane extends your GoBoard installation for mud pans, steam rooms, and shared walls requiring a fire-rated board under the waterproofing. Now who's going to be the most badass installer out there? You are. That's right. You are, with your GoBoard and your membranes. Visit www.jm.com/GoBoard for all the product details. Check out all our other products, whether it's drains, wedges, sealant, screws to put the board up. What else do they got over there? They got the foam shower pan now. You know, put it together. There's almost a complete system. They got banding now too, right? So you go check out what GoBoard has going on. And you know, if you catch Shauna online, tell her, hey, I love hearing about you on Floor Academy. I'd appreciate that. All right, Allison, I got a similar story. Very early on, I had a gentleman call me, and he was, you know, just the floor was the whole situation that he had was a mess, and it wasn't for a floor. He was doing something with like a patio, and he wanted it all cleaned up. And I was like, I can't help you. Like, that's not my deal. You're looking at this, that, the other thing. And I, you know, I probably spent like 20 minutes on with him on the phone. And then out of nowhere, there was a review left on my like Google page. And no, Facebook page. And he was just like, Kyle was great. Doesn't offer the service I was looking for. Spent time with me. Was honest. Able to point me in the right direction. Gave me lots of great advice. Highly recommend going with him. Didn't ask him to do it. Didn't want him to do it. Just tried to help the gentleman out. As you know, I have knowledge. I'm going to try and apply it and be helpful. But I'd had other clients bring that up, and they were like, we knew you were the right guy because of this review. And so that did a lot for me over the years, because that was there saying like, look, there's somebody here that goes above and beyond and respects you as a person and wants the best for you, even if they're not going to make money from it. And that's, I think a lot of us in the industry that are operating at a higher level, that's where we're all at, is that we genuinely love what we do. We're super passionate about it. We want to share that with people, and we're happy to, because we don't get anything out of it if we keep it all to ourselves. And so, yes, I want to be able to connect with people and build a relationship and say, look, I may not always be the right fit, but I'm happy to find the right fit with you.
Yeah. I'd say that most of the listeners in this audience, there's probably, I'm sure I'm not teaching anybody anything new here today. The simple fact that they listen to your podcast shows that they take an interest in continuous learning and and improvement and self-development. So, you know, maybe this is somewhat of a new topic. I mean, how you know, honesty is kind of like, isn't it in the Ten Commandments? Just be an honest person. Just don't lie.
I mean, I think it's basic, but it's how we wrap it up, right? I think that's where how do we wrap this conversation around what we're looking at, right? What's this limbic resonance thing? How do we apply it? Like, it's not that, I think we all know there's no necessarily new information out there. We all just, everyone has to find a way they relate to it. And so I could cover this topic every day for a month, and each episode would connect with somebody else differently.
Differently.
Because 100%. They would each find the one that they were like, oh, that's the one that clicks with me. It, honestly, so I'm, and this is where, you know, on that topic, like, I'll throw it out there. So it's not that I haven't admitted that I'm an alcoholic on the show before. I had someone explain it to me, and they were like, you're allergic to alcohol. And I was like, oh, okay. So now when I'm 40 years old, like that's the thing that clicks. Like I knew I shouldn't drink. I knew it was bad for me, but I continued to do it anyways. But that's the one that got through. It was, oh, it's bad for my body. It gives me a chemical reaction that like does not cooperate with me and makes me unstable. Like, I'm allergic to it. It just, why that worked, no idea. But that's the one that clicked, and here we are now where I'm at. And it's been a great change for me, but it's weird what connects.
I love that you talk about that, because I think, you know, overconsumption of things is a problem in the construction industry as a whole.
For sure.
And I write about it in my book too, Kyle. I don't think you've read my book, but I'm in the same boat as you. I'm also allergic to alcohol, you know, and it was through that sort of self-discovery. And thank goodness I didn't have a whole lot of things to, I didn't have a whole lot of consequences. I'm really, really fortunate in that. But I learned very early on that I just needed to kind of put that aside. It wasn't going to help me any further as I get into my 40s. So several years ago, I was able to do that same thing. And I talk about it because I think people who have been in sales or people who are working in, you know, painting, construction, installation, I see it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I see it all the time.
Overindulgence is definitely a big thing.
Yeah. And I think inappropriate coping mechanisms. Mm-hmm. I think that's,
yes,
at the end of the day, that's the bottom line, is people don't want to look at themselves. And that's really a lot about what we're talking about today. Mm-hmm. Being empathetic, having emotional intelligence, like looking into your socially aware problems or self-aware problems, and like, how can we just be better people? Because in my world, it also applies to my job and sales and relationships. But at the same time, there's something that, you know, a bunch of my friends talk about. I'm pretty sure there's a 12-step program for just about anything on the planet. And I feel like the whole world could use one.
Yeah, I'm sure. Like you could, there's plenty of things that you could use it for. And there's 12-step programs for people on the other, on the receiving side of the bad day. And being able to work through how that happens and these relationships need to exist. And so, again, I think it comes back to, and really what we're talking about is being able to take that step back and look at the surroundings and say, all right, how do I, you used the term chameleoning before, and I think a lot of people would look at that as like a negative thing, like you're fake.
Yeah.
And I don't know that it makes you fake. I like that you use that term. I heard you use it before. I heard you use it at Tice, and I was like, oh, I identify with that. And that was me. Like, I didn't fit in with one clique in high school. If I wanted to go hang out with the skater kids one day, I could go and hang out with the skater kids, and they had no problem with me being there. And the next day, I could go hang out with all the really nerdy kids playing Dungeons and Dragons, and they didn't have a problem with me being there because I could connect with them and understand what they were doing and thought it was cool. Yeah. And, you know, then I could go hang out with the jocks, and then I could go hang out with the theater kids. Like, I could go be whoever I needed to be for the situation, but it was because I appreciated what they were into genuinely, because I was into it too, just maybe not to that extreme level. And so I don't think that chameleoning yourself into situations is a bad thing. We have a lot of people get in disagreements and they're like, I don't like my coworker. I have nothing in common with them. Do they eat? Do they breathe? Do they have a child? Do they watch a TV show? Like, you can hate absolutely everything about somebody. But we all have a ton of interest. There's got to be one thing you have in common. You both like having a drink poolside. I don't know what it is. Yeah. Go find that and build the relationship on that thing. And I think that's what you're doing when you're out selling, is if the dude's really into cars, you don't have to pretend to be into cars. Find out something about it that he likes that you like, and connect on that.
I'll give you another. I mean, this is a classic example in our industry. Again, using the woman's perspective. When I first started working around construction and fabrication shops and installation shops, you know, it wasn't easy for me because I didn't understand the machinery. I didn't necessarily speak the lingo. And at one point in my career, this was maybe, you know, 10 or so years ago, I remember having to they pushed me into starting to go talk to architects and engineers. And it was horrible. It was so uncomfortable, and I was scared. I found that a lot of engineers in the world, the engineer style of brain, for me, just the way they process information was completely opposite of the way I look at information and process information, right? Okay. I am not an engineer. So, you know, I'm setting myself apart here. And then here's somebody gave me a job and said, hey, you got to go work with these people. You got to teach them how to put this material on a ventilated facade. First of all, I had to learn what the word facade was. But no, I mean, all jokes aside, it was a challenge. It was a challenge to be a woman who literally really does not know much about what I'm supposed to be teaching, to go into someone who's professionally trained, who processes physics, which I would have flunked out of in school. We don't mix. We're like oil and vinegar. Okay.
Yeah.
So this is just an example of where like chameleoning paid off for me, because it took a while for me to develop a skill set to listen, watch, use body language cues, understand that I was never going to teach an engineer. I won't name the business, but anyway, I was never going to teach one of these architectural engineers how to do their job at all. Mm-hmm. And so my best result in that regard was to actually kind of chameleon myself into the subservient information only, let me check and get back to you type of responses. A, I wasn't in a position with all of the information that they needed. B, I'm never going to get a point across if I come across like I'm talking to you right now, which is sort of very bold, very direct, forceful with information. It's not going to be a success story.
Yeah.
So that's another example of limbic resonance and chameleoning. You have to. Sometimes you have to in this world. Like if we're going to all get along, or if we're going to be able to transmit information to people who it's difficult to talk to, then we have to like think about how they process, how do they learn, how do they work, and mm-hmm. I need to be able to be the balancing side of that equation. You know, you mentioned to me when we got on the call like an issue with a lawyer, right?
Yes.
Working with attorneys is another perfect example of learning limbic resonance, and this is a business skill, a simple skill that, I mean, if you own a business, you gotta know a lawyer. Like there's going to be a time that something's going to come up and that you need to be able to have a consultation. I'm very mm-hmm. fortunate myself that my father is one, and I cannot even go to my own dad for advice. You guys, I'm not kidding you. He's an impossible person to talk to. I can't use the 3-letter word that I would to normally describe him. And he's a classic old curmudgeon attorney. And if it's a challenge, as his daughter, it's a challenge to be able to go talk to him. And over the years, I've been trying to work on like my chameleoning skills and making sure that A, I don't cross certain lines or ask my dad for specific amounts of advice in this direction. Mm-hmm. And if you're working with any kind of an attorney, you know, you got to learn how to frame the questions correctly. How do they actually respond? Like attorneys love timelines. They don't really care about all the minor details. All they want to know are the time, date, action, and fact. And if you can actually like write an email to a lawyer speaking their language, you're going to get a better response.
It's funny you say that, because the lawyer that I'm dealing with, and nothing is wrong with my business life, folks. This is for my father.
Sorry. Like,
no, it's fine. Everything's all good. I'm fighting a probate estate planning attorney, and I gave her deadlines and timelines this morning, and she was not having it. She did not like the way I was speaking to her. I was very firm. I was very upset. And
she caught her off guard.
And it just, she was, I mean, I was being nasty, but I had every right to be, because she hasn't, she has not performed is how I will say it. She has not performed what she was supposed to. No, it's fine. I'm really hot, and I'm like, I don't want to go into it because I could do an hour on this alone right now, and that's not what we're here for. That may come up as another topic at some other point. But make sure you interview people well, and that did not happen in this case. And I was here. What happened was that my father had hired her to do the estate planning, and then my brother and I were like, well, that's who did it. She already kind of has an intimate knowledge of it. Let's go with it. And that was a huge mistake. So lesson learned, right? This is, we have to meet people and learn about them. And there was some hints that things weren't great, and we didn't think about it until later. So
we all have to learn those lessons, Kyle. I don't think you should be embarrassed, but
I'm not.
What a great translation of what we're talking about today, the limbic resonance, because it's, in the end, it's about communication styles and relating with people and getting on their level. And that level can be, it's not about high or low. It's just, where are they at in that moment?
Yeah, there's definitely no limbic resonance with me and this lawyer. That is for sure. and I'm not willing to try at this point. I'll be honest. If it was something else, I would probably put in the effort. But I am 1,000% done. So, no. But it's very relevant. I think it's interesting that it came up, and then I'm having this conversation of trying to like find the common ground with people and work with them, and I'm just like, I'm done with this lady. Like, she's done pushed the limits with me. I'm not gonna do it.
But Kyle, that's a great example. Like, we're not always meant to, you know, work with everybody either. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to know when. I love the phrase from poker: know when to hold and know when to fold. I mean, and everybody uses that, but like, you know, honestly,
well, where is that built into your training system, right? Since you're training like salespeople, right? Like,
closing.
But when do you identify that this is not the client for me? And what happens if it's very early on in a consultation, like first 5 or 10 minutes? Do you immediately bow out, or what are you doing? This is great.
No, so you have to shift the conversation is a big thing here. So it's in the negotiation, it's in lead development and figuring out, you know, the type of customer that it is. And it's also in closing. So know when to hold, know when to fold, and being able to walk away is not in the beginning or in the end. It could be anywhere along the line, the journey of a project. And I was on the phone with a coaching client today, actually, and this morning, excuse me. And she had, she was asking me about a client that came in who is basically a tire kicker, right? Mm-hmm. We've all had them. Especially people out there who own a showroom, you get tire kickers all the time. Those of us who have been in sales for a really long time, usually I can, you know, figure out that they're a tire kicker in the first 5 or 10 minutes. It doesn't mean that I'm not going to give them my time. Okay, I want to make that very, very clear. But in that regard, I'm going to go over to that person. I'm going to start asking those questions about project dates and what are they looking for and how can I help them? And I'm going to start plugging for information. Okay. If I get the sense, or if the customer, you know, leaves and I have to follow up and they come back in and they're doing the same thing over and over again, you know, this is a person who's just knocking the tires around and they're not going to make any commitments. In this regard, the coaching client that I'm working with was a little upset, you know, because the lady keeps coming back in. She keeps picking out more flooring chips and paint chips, and she doesn't know, like, how, like, where do I go from here? You know, at that point, the know when to hold and know when to fold is either you start charging for your time, you put a contract on the line that says, like, hey, I'd really like to help you design the rest of this project, but I'm going to need a $500 deposit today so that we can move forward. You know, at that point, when you are putting a line out there that involves money and clicking a button or signing something, you know whether or not you're going to have the opportunity to close the sale or not. And we're not always in control of that. I mean, there are things that we can do to try to turn it around. I talk about asking a lot of questions and those proactive questions, like, you know, install dates and can I go ahead and, you know, I'm going to go ahead and order this material for you today. I need this deposit. Mm-hmm. I need you to sign here. Those types of questions are going to be the clues that somebody needs on whether or not this is an actual positive sale. In my line of work with the stone industry, I have had to deal with some pretty nasty customers over the years, especially men who think they can talk down to me or they want to reject the material that I'm offering. Over the years, I've had to heavily develop my expertise and I've put my heart and soul into, you know, being the best stone expert that I can. So mm-hmm. nobody really gets a one up on me now, you know, 15 years ago, of course, but, knowing my customer base and being able to look at somebody and say, like, hey, you don't want to buy that? No problem, because I'm going to go sell it over here. 9 times out of 10, I haven't bought X material for stock without having several customers in mind. You know, I was a rare breed that I would ever buy some stock item or inventory, something in the showroom that is not going to be for, a larger piece of my customer base. And that way, you know, if somebody's giving me an issue, I'm really not afraid to walk away from the sale. And I'm just going to go and put it in front of this customer over here instead.
I think that's great advice.
I can get on a roll here with this. Sorry, Kyle.
No. I love it because I think a lot of times, especially early on in careers, when you become owner operator, you go out on your own and you're hungry and you're like, I need every project.
Yeah.
You kind of do. I get it. But this is also why we need to learn how to manage money and hopefully not put ourselves in that position. But every project isn't good for you. Not every client is a great fit. Not every project is going to be able to showcase your skills the best. And I get wanting to better yourselves and take on a project that maybe is outside of your comfort zone, but has a really cool feature and you can probably get some help and figure it out. I've done that.
Yep.
But that doesn't mean that you need to go outside of your normal scope. And, you know, I get that as flooring guys, we have to do baseboards a lot. But if they want the casing replaced, like, you don't have to do the casing. You can turn that project down, right? You don't have to become a trim carpenter because they want flooring and baseboards done. But then because the baseboards are getting done, they want the casing done. And then they're like, well, who's painting it? And you're like, well, okay, I can paint. And now we're offering painting services. And then there's drywall patches. So now you're becoming a drywall guy. Like, where does it stop?
Where does it end?
So don't.
And where do you start delegating?
Yeah. You have to know what your role is and then stick to it and know that that's okay. It's also okay to walk away. If somebody doesn't want to do the prep work, I don't care how bad you need the money. It's not worth the liability of taking on a failure and having to pay for the prep work plus replacement costs out of your pocket. It is easiest to say, this contract's null and void, pay me for the demo that I've done, and you walk out of the house, right? Like, just have pride in yourself and know, and like, you're okay and you know what you're doing and you're making the right decision.
Yes.
It's okay to upset people.
But I also want to hone in on the point of especially if you're like a one man band, mm-hmm. I'm a one woman show, right? But this is what a great opportunity for you to partner up with people in your audience.
For sure.
I'm sorry, not in your audience, in your network.
Yes.
So I talk about this a lot. Like, you hit it on the head. You can't do it all. And this is where it's really important that surrounding your typical residential remodel or commercial, are you surrounding yourself with the best people that are also in the same price point as you, who do a good job, who align with your business, who have the same type of values? Mm-hmm. Are you choosing those relationships so that you guys can send each other business? Because if you're also if you're a flooring installer and you get asked to do drywall, like, do you have somebody on the fly that you can rely on and call to come in and help you out with that job? Does the homeowner always need to know about it? No. You know, but at the same time, if it's a bigger thing like paint or stone, in my case, you know, what mm-hmm. kind of a network do you have that can actually help bring you more business? because if you're each referring different parts and pieces from the random jobs that we're going to see, you know, down the pipeline, you're creating more opportunities for both Definitely. You and the other man.
It's all about networking, but I guess that comes back to who do you know? How do you build a relationship with them? How are you connecting and developing it, which is where we started. And it sounds like we've come full circle now.
Yeah, I'm sure we're probably about to wrap up here, and I thank you so much, because I could talk about this stuff for hours in general, and I hope I've given your audience some nice insight from a woman's perspective, mm-hmm. B, a national, you know, lifelong salesperson's perspective, and C, from somebody who's had to work very hard at becoming self-aware and becoming socially aware, and have had to do the work myself, and then I had to figure out how to teach others.
No, I love it. I found it very insightful. If no one gets anything out of it, know that I did. But I know that the audience will too. So, Allison, where can people find you if they would like to learn more about you, or if they're interested in some sales training? Where can they find all of that?
Of course, on my website, rep, like sales rep. Sales rep, it's repmethods.com. I'll be speaking at KBIS in a few weeks for anybody who might be going to the IBS Builder Show. I believe there's a flooring show going on in Las Vegas at the same time. Come on over to the convention center, and I'll be in the North Hall on Tuesday morning. I'll be at Coverings in April. If anybody's going to be around, you can look me up there. And just visit my website, drop me a note. I don't want to give my cell phone out over the live air, but I totally would do that.
No, that's fine. You can get her email on the website. I went and did that, because did I have your card? I either had your card or I had to go to the website. One of the two. I made it work. I found her. You can track her down. It's not hard. She's responsive and timely, and she's got all the things that you can schedule appointments and do it. It's super easy, and she's very kind and helpful. So reach out. I think she has lots to add. I loved having the conversation. I loved where it went and being able to talk about many different things, but all of it relates back to this being able to understand people and connect with them genuinely and build from there. So what do we got, folks? Check out the website, flooracademypod.com. Head on over to the shop. Pick up a t-shirt, hoodie. You know, again, if there's something that you want the Floor Academy logo on, ask me, and then I'll check out what the drop shipping company has, and I can create it. So we can have lots of fun, and you know, it can go on sandals and backpacks and magnets, and you know, there's a couple of Floor Academy bikinis hanging around out in the world. That was a thing that was requested at one point, which is funny. So you know, there's options. So just ask me, and we'll see what we can do. And if there's not, then I know that there's another guy I can ask that can probably put it on something, and we'll make that happen. But it helps support the show. You get some cool gear to say that you like the show and support it, and then you can let the guy behind you in line at the supply house know that, hey, I listened to this really great podcast. It's helped me change my business. You should check it out, because you're my marketing team. So I need your help to grow the show, and I would appreciate that. We got a quick word from Tice. So I was just at the International Services event in Las Vegas, where obviously I met Allison, and it was packed with amazing products and exhibits. We talked about the puppies. Go to the show and find the puppies. I will go there every day from now on. They just have puppies to go snuggle with, and it's amazing. So I'm going to do that all the time now. But whether you were there or if you unfortunately missed the event, the Tice team has released a lookbook covering a highlight of over 100 products that were featured at the show. You can access it now online at intlsurfaceevent.com/lookbook. That's LOOKBOOK. Or click the link in the show notes and it'll get you right over there. You can check that out. Don't forget, folks, it is like 11 months away. Well, it's like, I don't know when this episode comes out. It's like 11 months away. Go to the website, look up the dates for next year, put it on your calendar, block it out, and just go. If you don't, I know how you are as a contractor, because I was a contractor. If you don't book it out now, you're going to take a project and you're not going to go. So just go, and then you'll figure out how to charge more on a couple other projects throughout the year, and you'll recoup that money and you're going to be all good. If you need to learn how to make more money, keep listening to the show. That's what I got. So again, thank you, Allison, for joining us. I very much appreciate your time. Everyone, we will catch you all next week.